This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
Today we're bringing you part two of Man on the Stairs, the strange story of Marla Ware, whose decomposing body is discovered in her own home weeks after being reported missing. Witnesses say they heard movement in Marla's apartment, and one describes seeing someone lurking near Marla's door, all in the days before her body was found, and at a time when she was believed to be dead.
This is APB Cold Case. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
In part one, we learned about 35-year-old Marla Ware. In 1998, she was living on her own in a second-floor apartment in Oswego, New York. Her birthday was on June 5th, and that was about the same time she was last seen alive. There were apparently two parties to celebrate her special day, one attended by a handful of people on June 3rd, and another on June 4th that was just Marla and a male friend who was about 30 years her senior. When we left off, we were talking about a person of interest in Marla's case named Ray Newton. If you remember, Ray had been at Marla's birthday party on June 3rd, and when he asked Marla about them moving in together, she said no. Apparently, Ray didn't take rejection well, because according to witnesses, he seemed out of sorts for the rest of the evening. Lieutenant Brian Thompson of Oswego PD said that Newton had a violent past. He told us about an incident in March 1993 where Ray Newton and his live-in girlfriend head out for the night, leaving their child with a babysitter. But when they return home, there's an argument, and Newton brutally beats his girlfriend in front of the sitter.
Babysitter leaves, basically told, if you tell anybody about this, I'm going to kill you. I don't recall if she ends up calling, but I know that the victim in this ended up basically laying in bed for a period of time without medical attention before I think Mr. Newton finally called EMTs.
A report in the Syracuse Herald Journal said that Newton left her without medical attention for 24 hours. The victim, who had slipped into a coma, spent 6 weeks in intensive care. Reports say that Newton was initially charged with attempted murder, but accepted a plea bargain to felony assault and reckless endangerment. His girlfriend pleaded with the judge not to send Newton to prison, insisting that she believed his story that she slipped and fell rather than being assaulted. But the babysitter was an eyewitness to the brutal attack and apparently filled in some of the details. Newton was sentenced to a year in jail. Lieutenant Thompson next told me about a case from 2006.
Mr. Newton actually slashed the throat of a girl he was dating with they believed either a small knife or some sort of crystal that he wore on his neck. She was ended up transported to the hospital and survived. During that case, while they're investigating it in the very short aftermath, they find him again still at her residence. They didn't live together. He remained in the residence after she was taken away to be treated at the hospital.
The Syracuse Post-Standard reported that Newton was convicted of reckless endangerment and criminal possession of a weapon after a jury trial. Another incident 9 years later involved a member of Ray Newton's family.
2015 is an incident with his own mother. His mother was older at the time. They lived on Ellen Street here in Oswego, which is kind of the Newton family homestead. She had sustained a broken leg or some sort of leg injury at the time. He was living with her and she was asking for some assistance. You know, she's an older lady with an injury. She needs help. She had asked her something to drink or for dinner. And at that point, very, very calmly walks in, drags her to the floor and tries to suffocate her with a pillow.
The next case Lieutenant Thompson told me about was an investigation that he was assigned to, a burglary involving Ray Newton.
So then you jump to 2020, and this is the case that I worked on. It was a burglary. We're in the throes of the pandemic at this time. Young girl lives by herself here in the city. She's in the National Guard. She gets deployed down, I believe, to New York City to assist with COVID relief and all that, at which time he ends up burglarizing the residence, stealing various items, and actually lives in the house for a known amount of time. So again, that same kind of pattern is popping back up where he's living in this residence while she's away.
But Newton wasn't caught inside the woman's apartment. It would take an investigation to determine who had burglarized her home and decided to live there while she was gone.
So that neighborhood in particular, the people who live there have all been living there for quite some time. They're very cohesive. They look out for each other, and there's a lot of cameras in that little stretch. During interviews with people in the neighborhood, a common thing kept coming up across interviews that they've been seeing. They call them the man in the trench coat in the area. The guy walking around in a trench coat who they aren't sure who he is. We pull hundreds and hundreds of hours of video footage. And from just days and days and days of sitting there watching, because you really can't fast forward through it, you might miss something. We ultimately pick him up on camera. I was familiar with him. My boss at the time, Lieutenant Aldo Benacchi, who's a brilliant investigator, we both recognized him as Ray Newton.
Not only did they see him on camera, but the evidence technicians that processed the crime scene did some exceptional work that would give them the proof they needed to nail Newton for the crime.
So the night of the actual response, the evidence techs who teched the scene just did an absolutely brilliant job. I believe it was, his name is Rob Wallace, the patrolman here, and now investigator DeMario Andrello. They ended up taking samples of where they think he got in from into a window from the outside. They took swabs from the actual brickwork itself, which ended up coming back positive for an ID on Ray Newton. So just absolutely brilliant job by those guys as far as evidence tech work. Some of the video that we reviewed actually shows Mr. Newton coming out of and going into the residence, sometimes with some of the items that were stolen. We were also able to track down a lot of those items that were either given away or sold. They were pretty cooperative as saying who they got the items from. So it all came together very nicely. They really didn't have much of a defense. I think I was on the stand for maybe 5 minutes. So he was convicted of burglary in the second, petty larceny. And given his violent criminal past, he got quite a stretch, I think 15 years.
State prison records show that Newton was sentenced to 15 years. The district attorney at the time said that Newton was incapable of change and that for the safety of the community, needed to be locked away for the remainder of his life. Now, Lieutenant Thompson said something earlier about the burglary, that there was a pattern in Ray Newton's behavior. Let's listen to that again.
Young girl lives by herself. She's in the National Guard. She gets deployed, at which time he ends up burglarizing the residence and actually lives in the house for a known amount of time.
So what's the pattern? In the 2006 throat slashing incident, police said that Newton stayed at the residence after the victim was taken to the hospital. We're not sure for how long. But they also suspect that he may have been staying at Marla's apartment after she died and before her body was found. This pattern of staying where he was not supposed to be seems to go back several years. We found a report from 1980 where Newton, then 21, was discovered in an unpaid hotel room. He was found in the company of a 15-year-old who had been reported missing. He was charged with theft of services and endangering the welfare of a child. Lieutenant Thompson said there's some other clues that lead them to believe that Marla's apartment was being used while her body lay decomposing in her bedroom.
Watching the videotape of the actual scene itself, some things jumped out at me. One of those being that the toilet seat in the bathroom is up, single female. They're going to predominantly have the toilet seat down unless there's, you know, some sort of reason. So that jumped out at me right away, indicating that there is a male. Other reports from neighbors stated that during the time that Marla was last seen in her discovery, they heard running water in the apartment, toilets flushing. I believe there was one report of a neighbor found a male either climbing up or coming off of the balcony of Marla's apartment. They weren't able to give a very good description. It was nighttime, but all those indications are there that he was in there, yes.
Marla's brother, Mark, told me about an observation from one of Marla's neighbors.
That person had the apartment right below Marla. The way the living room was set up, it looked out to like a porch, and Marla's patio would be off that or above it. So he was sitting there watching TV, I guess, one night, and this guy started climbing up the banisters to get up to the next level. And Like I said, he turned around, come out and said, hey, get going. You know, I don't know if she's home or not, but if she wasn't, you know, you'd be knocking on the door instead of trying to climb in.
Mark also told me that when the landlord went to check on Marla back on July 23rd, there were dirty dishes in the sink.
Walked as far as the kitchen and seen the dishes and stuff and walked back out.
But when Mark went back to Marla's apartment after her body was removed, he saw something different.
The dishes he claimed were dirty were cleaned. I mean, they're rinsed. Yeah, they were in the sink, but they were rinsed.
And you'll remember in the case that Lieutenant Thompson mentioned about the deployed National Guard victim and how Newton had sold or given away some of that victim's possessions? Well, Mark shared another curious observation.
Well, that was one thing, you know, now that you mentioned burglary and stuff, but Marla loved jewelry, liked old jewelry. I don't know if the police took any of that or not. When cleaning out that place, I didn't find not one speck of jewelry. And I mean, she had some of my grandmother's and some of my mother's jewelry and stuff that she had bought. That was, you might say, was a hobby of hers. She'd like going looking at jewelry and stuff. And we didn't recover any jewelry at all.
So as we've probed deeper into Ray Newton's prior crimes and his MO, we can see why police are so interested in him. I asked Lieutenant Thompson if detectives interviewed Newton about Marla's death. He said they did speak with him while he was being held in jail.
At the time, he was locked up at Oswego County Jail for the forgery of the check that Miss Ware had reported and for the stolen vehicle. There was a couple different occasions where they tried to interview him. They didn't get super far. He basically got upset that they were interviewing him and blew them off. I mentioned before, I think that one of the investigators kind of floated that idea of, hey, you know, maybe this is how it happened and you just kept living there. And again, he didn't outwardly deny it.
So getting back to Lieutenant Thompson's theory, given everything that we've talked about so far, I asked him what he thinks happened.
So we talked before about the case where Ray tried to smother his mother with a pillow. Given that there was no obvious trauma to the body upon autopsy, my theory is that he did the same thing here. He either smothered with a pillow or manually strangled her, which I'm leaning more towards the pillow because obviously strangulation obviously can cause damage to bones in the neck that would have probably been obvious at autopsy. Not always, but a lot of times.
But police seem to be lacking that additional evidence that might get them to a point where they can make an arrest. And even though the case has gone cold, could this be one of those cases that benefits from recent advances in DNA science?
The pillow itself was one of the items that was collected. Not too long ago, I was speaking with one of the people here who was the property clerks, who was kind of more savvy to some of the techniques that are effective. They mentioned a technique the state police has available where they basically put an evidentiary item in this solution where they could test the solution afterward for a certain DNA. So that pillow has been sent off to the New York State lab to get it retested, especially with the theory that, you know, if he grabbed onto it on both sides to smother her, there's potential that there could be some DNA evidence there.
We know that Ray Newton was at Marla's party with other people prior to her death. So we can expect that the DNA of any of those people could be present in different places within her apartment. But what if Ray Newton's DNA is on that pillow?
Things like that are happening more and more. And the techniques that are being developed regularly give hope that one of the possible pieces of evidence could hold something. They collected a number of things that they considered might have been brought in or used by a suspect. The apartment itself was in pretty advanced stage of disarray, and all accounts from witnesses are that Marla was very, very orderly and clean, and she kept a very clean house. One of the things I noticed that was present was a couch that looked like it had been repositioned to watch a TV that had also been pulled to a different spot. I'm guessing that the TV itself may have been in Marla's bedroom and he couldn't stay in there any longer. So he brought it out to the living room and moved the couch. Cigarette butts, cups, things of that nature could potentially give us something.
There's also another piece of evidence that was brought to police in this case. It happened when Marla's brother was cleaning out her apartment in the days after her body had been removed.
As I was cleaning out the apartment, in the couch under the cushion was a wallet, and I had picked that up with a baggie, inverted baggie over my hand, so, and just touched the corners of it, took it down to the police department.
He hadn't opened it to see who it belonged to. I asked Lieutenant Thompson about the wallet. It turned out that it belonged to a male friend of Marla's who had last seen her about 6 months before she was last seen. Police said that receipts in the wallet confirmed the man's version of events. But what about Marla's other so-called boyfriend, Francis Dan? Marla's brother told me about that relationship.
If Marla needed some money for something, she'd always call him. He would come down, take her places, and they go and do things together. So, I mean, yeah, he was kind of a boyfriend, but, you know, it wasn't an exclusive type deal.
He was considerably older than Marla, 30 years older. And he was presumably one of the last people to see Marla on June 4th when he came to her apartment. Police say that Mr. Dan spoke with them about what he knew of Marla's last known movements. I asked Mark if he ever spoke with Francis Dan again.
He attempted it a couple times, and we run into him at the store, and he, you know, I didn't do it. I'm telling you the truth. I didn't do it.
Because of the circumstances of his relationship with Marla and the timeline of events prior to her death, Francis Dan was always going to be someone on detectives' radar since the early days of the investigation. But it does not appear that he's the focus of their investigation today. In recent years, police have been re-examining the entire case file, looking at it with fresh eyes. And with continuous advancements in forensics, maybe the physical evidence will provide that missing piece of the puzzle. Or maybe a tip from the public, someone who knew Marla, who lived nearby, or was at that party. Today, police still want to hear from anyone who may have information that could help them put some of the pieces of this puzzle together. Anyone who may have received jewelry or other property from Newton. Anyone who Newton may have talked to about Marla.
Either DNA or a confession, which I don't think is in the realm of possibility, or somebody to come forward with some sort of lead that just evaded investigators. Some witness that saw something, heard something to that effect.
Family members have wondered what really happened to Marla in her apartment more than 25 years ago. They still hope for answers.
There'd be a lot of relief. I mean, we've all wondered. She was taken from us way too early. My kids loved her, and she'd come out and play with them.
And police have not forgotten about the case. In fact, this investigation has special meaning to Lieutenant Thompson.
I had an uncle, he was a captain here at the time of this incident. He passed away before he was able to retire. He worked on the case here and there. So it's always kind of rewarding to me to be going through case files and to see something he did or his signature or, you know, kind of a special thing for me.
And while that family connection is a matter of pride for Lieutenant Thompson, he told me that his main concern is getting justice for Marla, whatever that answer might be. If you or anyone you know has information about the death of 35-year-old Marla Ware from Oswego, New York in 1998, call the Oswego Police Tips Line at 315-342-8131. Be sure to check out our show notes and the blog for this episode at apbcoldcase.com.
Thanks for listening to APB Cold Case. Tell us about your cold case at apbcoldcase@spawngroup.com. APB Cold Case is an original Spawn Group production.